You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
As Mayor Bloomberg's days in office dwindle down to a precious few, many are looking at what kind of New York City he's leaving behind. There have been major successes and failures and more than a few controversial proposals along the way, but my next guests argue that one of the mayor's signature achievements while in office has been largely overlooked, his environmental record. And they join us now, Catherine Bagley and Maria Gallucci of Inside Climate News, who've called their new ebook Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Mayor Bloomberg is launching his legacy tour today, which his office says will highlight key initiatives and successes of his 12-year tenure. Maria, do you expect him to be touting his environmental policies over the next few days?
I certainly think he would, given that it's a bright spot, relatively speaking, in his administration. And it's something that is on a lot of people's minds still. You know, we're only a year or so past Superstorm Sandy, and a lot of people are still recovering and rebuilding from the impacts of that storm. And they're thinking about, you know, what will New York City look like in the future? And so I certainly think that's something he'll be touting.
Well, Catherine, broadly, what do you see as Bloomberg's major environmental achievements?
So I think he's tackled the issue of climate change in a way that, you know, really no other mayor in the United States has done. And he spent the last 7 years really working on it. And one of the things that really makes it unique is that, you know, so much of it is based in this kind of hyper-local climate science in ways that other cities' plans aren't.
Do you think the mayor has been successful in changing the attitudes of New Yorkers about the environment?
I think for a long time, it wasn't really on their radar until Superstorm Sandy, because I think that the storm really brought it home for a lot of New Yorkers.
And as we've seen in other places like New Jersey, some of these concerns were dismissed until it was too late. Maria, did Mayor Bloomberg come into office expecting to take up environmental causes?
No, certainly not. When he came into office, New York City had, of course, just experienced the September 11th terrorist attacks, the budget, the economy were kind of down in the dumps. And so that's really where his focus was. And it wasn't until about 2005, when city demographers came out with these projections that New York would have a million more people by 2030, that the Bloomberg administration kind of stopped and took a look and said, okay, well, what does that mean? The city is already overstrained. We're sort of beyond our capacity now. What are we going to do with a million more people? And so then they started to look at how do we reshape the city, and that in turn sort of opened the door to consider looking at environment.
And Catherine, you're right that Bloomberg was uniquely qualified to steer the city on environmental issues. Why?
I mean,
did he have a personal interest?
He has a personal interest, and he comes from a scientific background. We had an interview with him in September, and he talked about, you know, as a child going to the Boston Museum of Science. And when he was studying in undergrad, he was a physics major before switching to electrical engineering. And so he, you know, he has kind of a scientific mind. And so when it comes to issues like climate change and other environmental issues, he approaches it almost like a scientist. And for him, he never questioned the science behind climate change.
One could argue that New York City faces two major environmental challenges. One is pollution that's either generated on a day-to-day basis or hanging around in the form of legacy pollutants. And the other is the long-term challenge of climate change. Has the mayor focused on these two problems equally, or has one gotten more priority? Climate change, perhaps.
I'm not really sure. I think that in the Plan YC agenda, which is a sustainability agenda, you do see a focus on both. The Clean Heat campaign, for instance, focused on replacing high sulfur heating oil in buildings with things like natural gas or biodiesels. And that addresses the issue of soot, of sulfur, sort of these particulates, the pollution that causes asthma and sort of the short-term issues. But then also there's been an aggressive effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They're already down 16% compared to 2005 levels. The goal is to get them to 30% by 2030.
How does that compare with California, which has been has had a campaign to reduce those emissions for maybe 30 years or so. Do we know?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it's also different, you know, comparing a city action to a state-level action.
Well, I was thinking of Los Angeles mostly.
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head.
In September 2006, Mayor Bloomberg announced that his administration would try to make New York one of the most sustainable cities, and that word was very fashionable around that time. Did it actually signal a shift in city policies and environmental priorities?
I think it did. I think one of the remarkable things about Plan YC is that it's covered, it's being implemented across the spectrum of city government. And so it's not just, the environmental agencies that are focusing on it or the Parks Department. It's every city agency.
Now, Plan YC is one of the more confusing names of a proposal because it's PLA and then NYC. So you could pronounce it all sorts of different ways. I prefer Planitia, which would be the Serbo-Croatian pronunciation. Or when did the Bloomberg administration begin developing Plan YC?
Well, the concept behind the plan began really in 2005 when they started looking at the projections that a million more New Yorkers would live in the city by 2030. And in 2006 is really when they decided, okay, this isn't just a land use plan that we're developing, it's a sustainability plan. And so they hired a director, Rit Agarwal, and really started fleshing it out over 18 months and it ultimately launched on Earth Day in 2007.
Well, weren't many city agencies rolling out their own sustainability initiatives around that time? Was anyone coordinating them?
That was kind of the challenge, is that they were happening, but they people weren't talking about it. They're happening quietly and not in a coordinated fashion. But, you know, when you're trying to address things like planting trees, for instance, that involves not only the Parks Department, it also could involve the Department of Environmental Conservation because it includes stormwater. And so there wasn't sort of this cross-agency collaboration before Plan YC.
Now, this is into his second term. Did the mayor think that he'd be able to achieve it all before he was leaving office? Because at that point, it wasn't clear whether he would even be able to have a third term.
I think it was a long-term plan for the city. You look at kind of 2030 as the end goal. But the issues of climate change and environmental problems, these are issues that are going to take decades to tackle. And so I think he was mostly just laying out the blueprint that he was hoping, the mayors that followed him would follow.
How much was Plan YC estimated to cost when it was released to the public?
It was expected to cost the city at least $1.6 billion over 10 years.
And that was before the financial crisis?
That was.
Did that put a hold on some of the projects?
It did. What you saw was the bigger ticket projects like transportation initiatives, regional parks initiatives. Those were put on hold. Deadlines were pushed back. That simply the money wasn't there or, they had to shift their priorities.
The Second Avenue subway was put on hold again.
Perhaps to no one's surprise.
But many people would assume that Manhattan still got the best of the deal and that the other boroughs wound up having more of their projects put on hold. Is that true?
I think it was about equal because a lot of the initiatives that were in Plan YC were focused across the five boroughs. And so, it wasn't just increasing green space in Manhattan. It was increasing green space in all of the boroughs. I think all the projects kind of took an equal hit.
Well, there were 127 projects. What are we talking about?
Of what they've accomplished?
No, what kinds of projects did they have in mind?
Oh, sure. Well, they were divvied up into 10 categories. So you saw projects that would tackle transportation specifically, that would look at buildings in particular, and that included developing more affordable housing, making buildings more energy efficient. Energy was a section, and so that included developing more local energy supplies like rooftop solar panels or even just building more efficient systems.
And the mayor is going to ride on the number 7 line into its new through its new extended link to 34th Street and 11th Avenue, is it?
I believe so.
He wants to do it now before he leaves office because it isn't going to open until Bill de Blasio is at Gracie Mansion. Mm-hmm. My guests are Maria Gallucci and Catherine Bagley. They have written Inside Climate. They are from Inside Climate News, and they've written a new ebook called Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. One of the major proposals to come out of Plan YC was congestion pricing in Manhattan. And you write that the mayor lobbied hard for the proposal. Why did he see it as so important?
I think the data that its staff had done showed to him that it would actually have a tangible impact on reducing traffic flows, reducing air pollution, and it would, you know, put hundreds of millions of dollars into the pot to help develop subway lines and bus lines. And so I think he understood or believed that there would be sort of a net benefit for the city, even if it hit drivers.
He made a number of trips to Albany in his helicopter to personally lobby for congestion pricing. Was he being slightly tone deaf? Couldn't he have gone by train, which would have been a little greener?
Would have been nice, probably. But, you know, he's busy.
And he often flies off to the Bahamas, which is also not exactly environmentally friendly of him. State legislators were resistant to the plan. Why?
Well, many of them represented constituents in districts like in Westchester County or the outer boroughs, where their voters, the people that they represented, were the ones who would be paying this fee. And I think that they presumably realized that, you know, it wouldn't be very politically advantageous for them to support something that would hit their constituents in the wallet.
So we had Governor Spitzer and then Governor Patterson signing on to the idea, but Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver refused to endorse congestion pricing. And it was because of that concern. Is it possible that the mayor's personality got in the way of getting congestion pricing through? If you don't agree with his policies, he can be kind of brutal verbally.
Well, that was the understanding that we had, is that, you know, some state senators really, you know, they did not like his approach. They really kind of chafed at this idea of congestion pricing being hammered down their throat. And so I think you did see some pushback from people who probably didn't take too kindly to Bloomberg style.
And then he got kind of harsh in his in dealing with the opponents of congestion pricing.
Sure, he didn't mince his words.
I suspect that has not earned him friends around the country, even when people might agree with him on something like gun control.
Well, and I think you saw, I mean, when he kind of briefly kind of played with the idea of running for president, his kind of national legacy is interesting. I think there's a lot of people that love him and a lot of people that hate him.
Mm-hmm. My guests are Catherine Bagley and Maria Gallucci of Inside Climate News. Their ebook is Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Catherine Bagley and Maria Gallucci of Inside Climate News. They've called their new ebook Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. Bloomberg is often criticized for being too Manhattan-centric. Wasn't there certainly a lot of outer borough opposition to congestion pricing along with the people in Westchester and Long Island?
Yeah, there was, because they saw this as something that might benefit, you know, the folks in Manhattan wouldn't be hit as hard because they were already within the congestion pricing zone, but the people who had to drive to get to work would end up shelling $8 extra a day during the week. So certainly there was resistance.
And now there's talk again about putting tolls on the East River bridges. Is that one of Bloomberg's ideas?
I don't believe it is, but it certainly is sort of in line with the idea. But I think it comes from outside the administration.
Some of Plan YC's initiatives, like the green roofs proposals, which would have put more plants on rooftops, had to be scaled back and replaced with programs encouraging reflective rooftops. Why has the city been encouraging people to paint their roofs white?
Well, the understanding is that if you paint your roof white or silver and some sort of reflective color, that the heat will bounce off, and in turn your building sort of stays much cooler. You don't need to pump as much energy into the air conditioner. Lower your energy bills. The estimate is that in a 5-story building, you could reduce your bills by as much as 25%.
So do we know how many people have actually done that to their buildings?
I don't know.
I haven't seen
a
lot of people on rooftops with cans of white paint.
Well, one anecdote that I've heard Mayor Bloomberg say several times is when he is flying over New York City and you look down, he estimates that about 80% actually of all the flat rooftops in New York have some sort of reflective coating.
A third of the city was rezoned during his tenure, and there's been an accompanying building boom in the city. Is new construction in New York required to build greener buildings?
They are, yeah.
I know they're all required to put up these teeny little terraces that I can't imagine anybody wanted to go out on.
Yeah, new buildings certainly have much more stringent regulations. And what's interesting is that the city is also trying to apply some of the same rules to existing buildings, which is really where you're going to see the biggest impact because, New York is already filled with buildings, and so most of the work will be there in those existing structures.
And what kinds of things are being imposed? Has there been any kind of pushback from the builders?
Yes, in 2009 is when the Bloomberg administration and city council proposed the Greater Buildings Plan, and that included 4 laws that would essentially require new and existing buildings to do a host of things to make themselves much more energy efficient. And this was right after the financial recession. There was a lot of pushback from the real estate industry, from co-op boards, from developers who were saying, there's a credit crunch right now. How can you expect us to be able to afford to pay, to get the money to pay for these projects? And so there was some compromise, in the end with the rules.
Some of the poorest areas in New York also have the worst air quality. What steps had the administration taken over the last 12 years to address that problem?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is the switch in heating fuels has made a really big difference. And, there's been a drop of about 69% of sulfur dioxide from those, and that's a major health concern.
So they're phasing out number 4 and number 6 heating oils?
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the plan to slash the city's carbon emissions is 30% by 2017. Do you think we're going to get close to that goal?
I think a lot of it depends on the next administration. And right now it's not really clear how closely Bill de Blasio wants to actually work on these issues.
Should we see the post-Sandy Special Initiative for Rebuilding and Resilience, or is it SIRR? Is that what it's called, S-I-R-R?
Yeah, it's SIRR or S-I-R-R. They call it either.
Is that a complementary piece to Plan YC?
It is. It's kind of the next step. But it's a lot more aggressive on the issue of climate change than the Plan YC initiatives were. For a long time, Plan YC focused on mitigation, reducing greenhouse gases. But the SIRR plan actually focuses on protecting New York City from future climate-related threats, things like stronger storms, rising seas, fiercer heat waves, things like that. And generally, these are projects that are much bigger. They require more money. They take more time to build.
Well, there have been proposals for putting all sorts of things into New York Harbor to protect us against the kind of storm surge that we have seen, but they would require billions of dollars. Has anybody actually been proceeding with any of those plans?
Well, I mean, they're all proposed in the SIRR plan that was released in June, and the overall package of the SIRR plan is 257 initiatives, and a lot of them include this kind of massive coastal protection system, which protects, not just Manhattan, but Staten Island, the Rockaways. And the city has secured about, I think it's $15 billion of the $19.5 billion that they need to put the plan in place. But again, they haven't, these are long-term projects. They haven't had time in the last 6 months to really kind of actually start the construction.
Another component of Plan YC was the Million Trees campaign. How far along is that project?
I believe Mayor Bloomberg planted the 800,000th tree last month. So they're 80%
of
the way.
And where are those trees going?
They're going all throughout the five boroughs. Actually, there are a few planted outside my neighborhood in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Another component of Plan YC was to convert the city's 13,000 yellow cabs to hybrids. There has been a real problem with that plan because they were imposing a car that not everybody liked on taxi drivers.
And actually, the original proposal that the Bloomberg administration made, which was approved by City Council in 2008, was struck down in a lawsuit. The taxi industry essentially argued successfully that the city was trying to regulate tailpipe emissions, which is something only the federal government can do. But we did see about 6,000 or so yellow cabs did convert to hybrid models in anticipation of these rules. So even though the city can't effectively require these, we're still seeing a change.
He's lost a lot of his initiatives in the courts, hasn't he? Not just the cabs, but supersizing and some other things.
He has, but for the most part, I mean, I think the Plan YC initiatives have been relatively safe from the courts, and a lot of them are proceeding without any real interruption.
And then there's a whole green cab, although they look very much like yellow cabs.
The green barrel cabs.
Yes, without, like unwashed yellow cabs. And there's been a lot of complaints from taxi drivers about that, because yellow cab drivers, because they see the green cabs in Manhattan picking up fares. And I wonder if this wasn't just a way to get more cabs on the streets.
I'm not too familiar with the green cab proposal, but
well, it was intended to provide cabs to the boroughs because they were so underserved by yellow cabs.
Mm-hmm.
NPR recently ran a report about how CityBike is not being embraced by low-income communities. Do you think that many of the mayor's initiatives have been distributed across the city in a way that improves the quality of life for both the wealthy and the poor?
I think, things like the Million Trees Initiative and more green spaces, I think those have certainly been tried to, spread out across the five boroughs. But, I'm sure that I think a lot of the initiatives that you see in Manhattan, for example, the pedestrian plazas and reducing traffic in the middle of Manhattan, those definitely benefit people in Manhattan and the big tourist industry that's here. So,
and the delays in the transportation projects probably did mean that those in the outer boroughs, maybe saw some of the planned NYC initiatives delayed, like the Select bus service was supposed to come out a lot sooner than it actually has.
We only see one of them going through Brooklyn right now.
Right, and they're originally eventually going to be five. And so that's where you see an impact. People in far-flung communities need more transportation options.
My guests are Maria Gallucci and Catherine Bagley, authors of Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In the Bush years, there was little discussion about climate change at the national level. Did that motivate states like California and cities like New York to take their own steps?
I think in a lot of ways, yeah. You had, for example, when the Kyoto Protocol, when the Bush administration refused to actually sign the Kyoto Protocol, a coalition of mayors actually got together and said, okay, we're going to act on reducing emissions in a way that the federal government isn't. And Mayor Bloomberg was one of those mayors. And so I think you saw a lot of cities and states kind of taking it into their own hands.
The city has plowed ahead with major development projects along New York's waterfront. How can Mayor Bloomberg claim that he prepared the city for rising sea levels and storm surges when his own zoning policies are putting thousands of new residents in glass wall towers right along the waterfront?
Well, that's definitely one of the biggest and most controversial issues in terms of the climate change work that he's done, with some of the scientists that have actually been involved in the city work saying we probably need to back away from the waterfront.
The mayor didn't say that. After Sandy, he said we wouldn't retreat from the coastline.
Yeah, and it's I don't know if it's caused a rift, but there's certainly a little bit of tension. But I think what's important is that the Bloomberg administration really supports their idea of developing the waterfront, because they say they're changing construction codes and they're requiring that all new buildings that go up on the waterfront are actually, you know, prepared and built to handle the future impacts of climate change. And so they're kind of taking on the risks themselves.
But there are added factors. Maybe the buildings are built on stilts or the like, but then there's infrastructure, there are transportation, all sorts of other things that seem to be environmentally unsound.
Well, a lot of the work that they have proposed as well after Sandy require things like hardening the infrastructure to be able to handle, a storm surge that came, like the one that came with Sandy, and rising sea levels. And so they are, I think, trying to address that issue. But the fact of the matter is that New York is already bursting at the seams. And so if you don't develop the waterfront, where do you put all of those people? And so I think the Bloomberg administration has said, we're going to try and at least develop the waterfront smartly.
Well, the people who are going into the waterfront are only of one economic group. There doesn't seem to be much concern for housing for poor people. And right now there's a big issue about homeless shelters that is only going to be resolved by the next administration.
Well, and part of the post-Sandy plans actually addresses the issue that a lot of the low-income housing in the city is in these low-lying areas, areas that when you look at historical maps of New York were actually wetlands that were filled in over the past few centuries. And so there's actually plans to fortify these low-income housing units to kind of protect against future threats.
Fordham political science assistant professor Christina Greer told Newsday that Mayor Bloomberg was the Robert Moses of the 21st century. For better or worse, he changed the layout of the city, she said. Do either of you agree with that?
I think, yeah. I think, you know, in my opinion, I think he has changed the layout of the city pretty dramatically in terms of the amount of green space that there is now. And you're also seeing, you know, places on the waterfront. You have, for example, the Brooklyn Bridge Park is not just a beautiful park. It's also built to protect from future storms. And so they are changing the waterfront.
Is that solely a Bloomberg project?
The Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the Brooklyn Bridge Park has been around for a long time, but the actual construction of the park and the designing of the park was done during the Bloomberg administration, and it was part of the Plan YC initiatives.
You write that the mayor believes that progress would be faster if climate change measures were presented as public health initiatives.
Yeah.
How would that work?
It's this idea that certain things that we do today can benefit, folks here and now and also future generations. So, for example, swapping high sulfur heating oil for something like natural gas or maybe solar powered electricity, that reduces soot pollution and sulfur pollution. It reduces asthma rates in people here and now. And it also has a long term impact in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So this, and that's sort of more politically palatable, right? You can say, okay, well, I don't want my kids to have asthma. That's more tangible than saying, I don't want my great grandkids to suffer the impacts of climate change.
Has the mayor taken a position on hydraulic fracturing?
He has. I mean, and he said that he supports it as long as it's not in New York's watershed in the Catskills, which is definitely a controversial position among environmentalists in the city and in the nation.
Well, you know, let those farmers have to suffer as long as we in New York don't suffer. You live in the Hudson Valley, Catherine, so are people up there happy to hear that sort of thing?
Well, we're just outside of the watershed, and so, I think people are pretty upset. It's kind of like, well, it's okay to pollute. It's okay to pollute my land as long as the people in New York City are doing okay. And it's going to be interesting to see what the next administration actually does on that issue.
Has the mayor had a good relationship with environmental groups?
I think that it's probably been mixed. I think, you know, he certainly has a strong relationship with environmental groups that were involved in Plan YC, like the Environmental Defense Fund, the New York League of Conservation Voters, who were able to sort of contribute to and help shape the plan, but certainly smaller, more community-based groups There are some that feel maybe their needs have been overlooked, that their voices haven't been heard, that, you know, only the big powerhouse groups are the ones that have any sway.
Has Bill de Blasio revealed where he stands on Plan YC and some of the other Bloomberg environmental initiatives?
So he's called what the Bloomberg administration has done a bold blueprint. And on his campaign website, he kind of laid out a general idea of what he'd like to do. But overall, environmentalists are pretty disappointed about how detailed that information is. They want more information because there's a real fear that he'll kind of come into office and want to completely redo everything that the Bloomberg administration has done. And they say that that's a very kind of dangerous and costly delay.
Well, there's some things he won't undo. He lives in Park Slope, where many people objected to the bicycle lanes, mm-hmm. but I think it's too late to change that. What have the lanes done to bicycle ridership in the city?
I think overall the number of cyclists has gone up a lot, and, you know, just the bike lanes, but also the city bike program as well. And you're seeing a lot more people actually being able and going out and commuting to work that way. I have a lot of friends that do that.
Mm-hmm. Bill de Blasio is also moving to Gracie Mansion. Is that an environmental issue?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. We've been talking about Catherine Bagley and Maria Gallucci's book, Bloomberg's Hidden Legacy, Climate Change and the Future of New York City. It's an e-book. And how is it published?
You can find it on Amazon's Kindle, and we also have an iPhone and iPad app that you can download it, and we also published it on the Inside Climate News website.
And we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Catherine Bagley and Maria Gallucci for being on our show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.